This podcast is a production of Crosspoint Church. Visit us online at crosspointwithane.org.
Well, good morning. Glad that you're here. Yeah, we're going to, as we always do, continue to worship by offering God something tangible and to join His mission in the world tangibly. So as the ushers come forward, we're going to give in a spirit of worship. And we say this a lot, but you can take us up on it. If you have questions about what worship and finances, resources, and all that, every meaning of the word resource, what those things have to do with each other, just encourage you to have that discussion. We'd love to have that discussion with you. So, and while they're doing that, we are going to get started. We kick off a series today for the next three Sundays called Rethink. It's not just the title, it's actually what we're going to do. We're going to rethink. And it's not just something we're going to do for the next three Sundays, but really something that we'll always do around here and that I would encourage all human beings to do, to rethink the basics of what it means when we say God, what it means when we talk about the church, when we talk about organizing our lives around Him, our role with Him and on His behalf and all that. So we're gonna rethink. We're going to start in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, second book in your Bible. So start at the beginning, Genesis, Exodus, chapter 20. If you don't have a Bible, we'll put the text up here. If you do have a Bible, just recommend that you go ahead and turn where we reference. Exodus chapter 20. I was in radio for a while, and most of the time when people hear that, they think that I mean I was a radio personality, that I was a DJ. I did get to be on air from time to time, but I wasn't a DJ. I got to write commercials. I loved doing that. Got to do voiceover work for that stuff. But my main job was to sell advertisement. Radio, you know, I sold air at a premium, basically, is what I did. And so it's interesting, I would walk in to a prospective client, and I like to show up unannounced because somehow the decision makers were present when I didn't tell them I was coming. And I would show up, and this is in the Dayton, Ohio area. I represented eight of the biggest radio stations in the Miami Valley. And so I would show up and say, hey, I'm Steve from, you know, the local rock station, 104.7, the rock station, or 103.9, the alternative rock station, or, you know, if I was in a client and they sold, you know, boots and saddles, I was, hey, I'm from, you know, Buckeye Country. And so I would walk in and they'd get really, really excited because, hey, somebody from the radio station's here, he must be a DJ. That means I'm about to get a bumper sticker or a t-shirt or a CD, you know? I might have to eat something really quickly, but I think I'm about to get concert tickets, you know? So when I'd tell them why I was actually there, it's not like I was treated badly, but I was definitely treated differently. Oh, business. Now suddenly I've got to sit here and wait. And do you have a business card since you don't have a CD? And so, again, I'm not treated poorly, but the engagement completely changed. I don't know, maybe some of you have been mistreated or dismissed unfairly. It's like you had this reputation that you didn't necessarily earn. It was a misunderstanding, a misrepresentation of something you said or believed or thought. And so it was always about 10 feet in front of you. And maybe you said things like, you know, I can't control what people think, but ultimately deep down you're like, man, I wish I got a chance to tell people who I really am, what I really think, what I really said. Maybe that's you, you know, the flip side of it. Maybe you're the one that improperly judged somebody, or you had this wrong idea about somebody, or you believed something that you had heard about somebody. Maybe it was a race issue for you, or a gender issue. And then a relationship began, and it's like, you know, I'm going to have to rethink how I interact with that person or those people. I'm going to rethink the engagement. I'm going to rethink where they come from. Maybe you're just hoping that day happens soon, but it hasn't yet. And so maybe for you, it's like your favorite story or your favorite book, your favorite movie. It's like you follow the story, and you think that this is true, and you think this is true about the main characters, and you get to the end, and you're like, wow, okay, I didn't see that coming. I'm going to have to go back and go through this again. That changes it. You're telling me Bruce Willis has been dead the whole movie. Whoa, okay, I'm going to have to watch that again. I'm going to have to listen differently. I'm going to have to watch Sixth Sense for people who don't get out much. I'm going to have to reinterpret these conversations, reinterpret the whole nature of the character. You see, I think we rethink in relationships, we rethink people all the time, and I think God asks us to rethink Him. Not to come up with something new, but just to pay attention to what we actually believe. where are we way off? See, I think human beings have had a long, long history of inventing gods and then reinventing that invention and then reinventing that reinvention. And so often people have trouble with faith. They have trouble with believing in God because what they recognize is I keep bumping up against somebody's creativity. I keep bumping up against somebody's, even if it's ancient, an ancient desire to control people. I keep running up against somebody's desire to understand, comprehend, and control and predict the idea of a deity. And it just doesn't resonate with real life. And so many of us have trouble with the whole idea of God and faith because all we've ever bumped up into is a misrepresentation of reality. So a lot of people, maybe some of us, sit here having faith in God. We sit here being comfortable with who God is. But what we don't realize is that comfortable is not a good place to be. That we haven't thought deeply about what we mean when we say God in a long time. Other people dismissed faith long ago. Maybe you're sitting here, but you're only here because you were promised a free lunch afterwards. And so I'm glad that you've been manipulated. Thank you for being here. But maybe for you, it's like, I dismissed this thing out of hand a long time ago, and I don't even think about it anymore. And you've never been told that, hey, the thing that you don't believe in, yeah, we don't believe in that either. We don't. The thing that you dismissed, yeah, it's not real. It's okay. Wow, that's kind of a big deal. So I want to celebrate what it means to rethink a little bit. We're going to start in Exodus chapter 20. If this is your first time in church ever, or if you grew up in the church, you've heard of the Ten Commandments, I'm sure. This is one of them. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Stop right there. Traditionally, we've heard that in the King James translation, you shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Which we've decided means don't turn God's name into a cuss word. You know, I don't think that is a good idea. I'll go ahead and say, yeah, you wouldn't do that with a family member. You know, you're walking upstairs, you stub your toe. Oh, Gary! You know, that would be just disrespectful or a little funny. But this commandment is way bigger than don't turn my name into a cuss word. Though I think that's wise. That's not what it's saying. It says, don't misuse the name of the Lord your God. In the Hebrew, we can get from it, don't mishandle it. Don't misrepresent it. This is God talking to his people saying, don't put words in my mouth. Don't tell people I'm like something that I'm not. Don't go do things and set up things like religion and tradition and dogma and ways of controlling people and say, hey, God said so, so you have to submit to it. Don't do that. Don't misrepresent me. Don't miscarry my reputation into the world. Don't do that. Now, we could believe, well, God's really insecure and wants to make sure that we get it right because he would hate for us to have the wrong idea about him. But that's not the case here. God knows that this damages people, that it's harmful for people. Don't misrepresent me is God saying, if you do that, misrepresentation and misunderstanding compounds in someone's mind. They sell it to their children. They sell it to their friends. And generation after generation, you slowly find human souls disconnected from knowing who their creator is. Instead, we've got a bunch of people making up gods in their own image, something that they can agree with a little easier. Don't miscarry my name. Now, we got to also note that the God says this to Israel, to the Israelites. These are his people, his chosen people. He doesn't speak into a megaphone to all human beings and say, hey, get this right. He takes his people out of slavery, out of Egypt, and says, you're going to be light of the world, salt of the earth. You're going to tell people what I'm like. You're going to show people what it means to be a human being. Don't misrepresent me. Take care of how you represent me. Take care of how you represent reality. Take it seriously. Don't get careless with what you believe. Don't get comfortable with what you just decided is true. Think about it. Meditate on it. Rethink about it. So us rethinking God, this is our attempt at just taking God seriously and taking the command seriously. Not for his sake, but for ours. There's a theological idea that I want to spend some time on today. It's what I'm calling the theology of, you know, the man upstairs. So it's the man upstairs theology. And just I want to talk a little bit about the Western civilization, American kind of idea of how we think about God. Now, a lot of people are thinking, you know, I don't know why we would want to spend time thinking about this in church because I've kind of grown comfortable with what I believe. I used to have a bunch of questions, but now I'm really okay with this idea that there's a God and that He wants us to live a certain way. I don't know why we'd be challenged to rethink that. And what I want you to know is, for so many people, and I've had a chance to talk to a lot of people, for so many people, they don't realize how deeply ingrained wrong and oftentimes even childish ideas are inside their hearts when they view God. People don't even realize how deeply ingrained wrong ideas are. And so as a result, their faith has these huge limitations. So what we talk about, what we challenge each other to do in here, we go out and then there's a disconnect. And so we sit back on, I'm just comfortable with that there's a God. That's kind of the default. Other people, I haven't thought about it in a while. Yeah, I dismissed it a long time ago. Why would I rethink it again? I've already decided what's true. And so what I have done recently and really noticed kind of some of the hang-ups, and we'll get into some of these hang-ups this morning, there's really just a few I want to focus on. And one of them, it's come up specifically even with my own family members lately, that we realize that some of the impressions and some of the ideas that we have about God in our head, a little embarrassing to admit, but when we think of God, we think of things that more resemble like the image of God in the Sistine Chapel. The artwork, beautiful, beautiful artwork that's done. But it shows God kind of as a European with a European attitude, barely dressed, up there, and we're down here. It's kind of a white dude with a beard, because if you've got a beard, that means you're wise. So God's wise, so God's got a beard, and He's up there and we're down here. And now that imagery, all that did was perpetuate something that was already present in Greco-Roman, Hellenistic kind of culture, where really the image of God that we kind of carried with us into Christianity was Zeus. Or in the Roman context, Jupiter, the old man in the sky. Zeus sits atop a mountain, commands the lightning bolts. You see imagery of him holding lightning bolts. He's up there, we're down here. He kind of watches over things. When he gets angry, you'll find out about it. That's the image that we carry with. Now, maybe you've never sat down and said, here is what I believe about God. But this is the filter that a lot of people have when they think of God. When they're reading the Bible, this is if they've never dealt with it, this is what they come to God believing. And this gets reinforced in a lot of silly ways. You know, you drive and you find the billboard that, you know, don't make me come down there, God. You know, that's just another reason I'm thankful we don't have billboards around here. Don't make me come down there. Yeah, because God's up there and we're down here and He comes down here when He gets angry. What? Where did we get that? Well, we got it from Zeus. We get that from Sistine Chapel and some of those images that haven't been thought through very well. It's fascinating. Now, with this man upstairs kind of theology, there's a point in it in a kid's life, and this is a spoiler if you have children with you, so sorry. There's a point where children decide there's no you know who, Santa. There's no. I'm looking for kids real quick before I say that. You know? Have fruit thrown at me. You blew it. There is no Santa. There is no Easter Bunny. There is no Tooth Fairy. And it's right at that point that we would say, there is no God, but we're too scared to say it. We won't say it. It's too scary. But we've really kind of got him in the same vein. We see him the same way as somebody that's somewhere else and is really, ultimately, as your brain develops, kind of hard to believe in. So I talk to adults who have spent most of their life of faith feeling guilty for what they actually don't believe, if they were allowed to be honest. So they spend their adult life trying to get as comfortable as possible with something that, if they're honest, they don't really believe. They want to, but it's just, man, it's really hard for me to believe that there's, you know, the man upstairs kind of thing. It's just really difficult to believe. Wish that I could, but I can't. And so as we see adults here and really just churches, you know, everywhere, that you have adults that are spending their life of faith trying to get as comfortable as they can with really something that could be best described as God the CEO. That He's up on another floor of the building in a nice office that you're not allowed to get to because of security. And He gives promotions for good behavior, but He fires people too. And you're probably feeling like you're going to get fired faster than you're going to get promoted. And around Christmas time, around the Christmas party, you might actually hear His voice. But that's it. Adults trying desperately to believe this and feeling guilty for what they don't believe. And so with this filter in place, think about, and some of you, this is going to be your story. I want to believe, And so I'm going to live as though it were true, but I've never really questioned how I see God. And so let's pass prayer through that filter. That God is the man with the beard up there, and I don't know how he hears all 7 billion prayers a day. Morgan Freeman could do it, but this guy, I'm a little Bruce Almighty if you never get up. Here's what it's like for a lot of adults. It's like a phone call where the guy on the other end won't talk. I mean, I can't even hear him breathing. So really, it's like leaving a message when I pray. And I know that the message is over because when I say amen, that's the beep. And so your prayer life as an adult person trying to take seriously this journey of faith is like decades of unreturned voicemail. Let's pass scripture reading through this filter. You read the Bible, it's written in a different time, in a different language, in a different culture, and you're reading it, and it's kind of disconnected from anything else that you involve yourself in. And every time you hear God being quoted or he's speaking in the scriptures, it's like you hear Zeus. You hear this thundering voice, and it's like, oh man. And so, yeah, it says God is love, and a lot of Christians talk about God is love, but God seems to be love for people who get it. And I don't get it, so I don't think God is love. I don't get the punchline, and so I don't think I'm in. I don't think God is love. I think God's just got a handful of lightning bolts, and he's looking forward to throwing them at me. I don't get it. Let's pass relationships through this filter. How do you see your relationships? Well, like a marital, an intimate relationship, sexual relationship. How do you see that with your spouse when that's, okay, God just kind of watches over me and kind of judges me for this and that, and he's disconnected from things that are really important to me, and How do I do that? How do you interpret a good day through that filter? I'm having a good day, so he must be happy. I'm having a bad day. I must have blown it yesterday. How do you interpret a tragedy through that filter? You know, something bad has happened. That means somebody's angered the cosmic referee. And so he's going to get even. And so that's why this... See, adults, and by adults I mean anybody that's begun to think, you know, from high school into college and into the rest of your life, there's a lot of adults that struggle with this. And many of us, if we're allowed to be honest, we don't believe in God the way we wish we could, the way we feel like we should, the way other people seem to have an easy time believing. But what if you have never taken the time, and by time I don't mean an afternoon, what if you've never entered a season of thinking about who God really is? What if the God that you don't have an easy time believing in doesn't exist? Maybe that's where the hang-up is. That somebody made him up. A friend made him up. Somebody misrepresented God. You filled in the gaps. Your parents told you who God was, and you filled in the gaps with creativity, and now you've outgrown your creativity. The gaps are back. But what if that's not who God is? What if the God of the Bible, and God is an English word and it's a title, it's not God's name. So when we're talking about God of the Bible, we're talking about Yahweh, who means it's the I am. God's like, what name really are you going to give me with a human mouth? I just am. That's what his name means. I am what I am. I is. What if Yahweh, the God of the Bible, is completely different, separated, set apart, and other to anything or anyone that you've ever known or imagined? In fact, when we read through the scriptures and we read that God is holy, we see that word holy and we think he's spiritual, he's better than me. And so every time the word holy, it's just that's pious. Well, I do believe God is better than me. But the word holy, all that means is set apart. He's separated. He's different than anything and anyone. He is other with a capital O. God is other, other, other. He is holy, holy, holy. What if the God of the Bible is nothing like you've ever heard of or imagined? Nothing like you've ever grown comfortable with, nothing like you've ever dismissed. What if? So the challenge is for us to rethink Yahweh, the God of the Bible, to rethink our life with him, in him, who we are because of him. We got to ask the question, and I don't care what you believe, am I guilty of misrepresenting God? I don't care what you believe. You're an image bearer. You're made in the image of God somehow. Do you image God well? And I can tell you that you don't if you never embrace seasons of thinking about what God actually is, who he actually is, and who you actually are because of that. If you don't look past compounding misrepresentations, misunderstandings, then it's not possible to image God well. And so we got to let God speak. We got to let the Scriptures speak for Him. We've got to remove the profile that we've already decided on. You know, you go out with a profile, you decide what you're already looking for. And so when you find what you're looking for, that's the right thing. We got to remove that. We got to remove that when we come to God. We've got to set aside what we've already decided is true or what we've already decided is untrue and let God speak for Himself. Society doesn't get to dictate what God is and what He's like. Culture doesn't get to decide that. The latest and greatest, the newest trend, that doesn't get to decide that. Science doesn't get to decide what God's like. You know what? The church doesn't get to decide what God's like. God tells us what God is like. We got to let Him speak for Himself. We got to let the Scriptures speak for Himself. This isn't something you do in an afternoon. That's why we talk about a journey here. It's a journey of understanding who this God really is. And I believe that if you even catch a glimpse of what God is really like, past all the clutter and the tradition and past all that, if you can sort through that and just catch a glimpse of what God really is, you will be forever changed. I don't believe a human being can look at his or her creator for who he really is and shrug it off. I don't think it's possible. So there's a whole bunch of different angles we could talk about in rethinking God, things that we've gotten used to. This discussion after discussion that we can have, and I hope that you have them. Today isn't meant to resolve anything for you. It's really kind of meant to bother you, and so that you would, you know, go out and continue talking about it. So I'll take the first word, not the last word, okay? You all just go discuss it for the next few hundred years. But there's really all different kinds of directions that we could go in. There's just a couple that we'll kind of land on today for, in terms of starting a discussion. A couple that have been life-changing for me, a couple that I'm starting to hear a lot again lately. And so what we'll do in rethinking God a little bit this morning, let's turn to Genesis chapter 1, first couple of verses in Genesis chapter 1. And so hopefully some of this stuff will at least ruin lunch for you, all right? Chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Really cool imagery that happens in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. I mean, you could spend a lifetime just going through all the pictures that were being shown of, one, what God is like, what creation is like, and the relationship there. Really cool. It's just lots of imagery that were being shown. Lots of metaphor, lots of really cool pictures, because that's the Eastern mind that this comes from. It thinks in pictures. So it's really cool stuff. And so this initial picture is there being a whole lot of chaotic mess, nothing. And God is present with that. And from this, He's going to create all things. It's a fascinating concept. When we see God in English, G-O-D, there's all kinds of different names depending on where you find God. He's got different nicknames and different titles and names. It typically just gets translated God or Lord in English. Kind of blah. Doesn't really tell us a whole lot. In Hebrew, from which this is translated, very rich language, all these pictures that come with God's names. In the beginning, God, the name for God here in Hebrew is Elohim. Try that out. Nah, you barely tried. Elohim. Nicely done. Elohim creates the heavens and the earth, and it's formless and void, and the Spirit of Elohim is hovering over the waters. Now, this hovering word in Hebrew is interesting because it's used elsewhere in the Hebrew Scriptures to denote a female eagle, a mother eagle, over her eggs, over her nest. Interesting picture, hovering kind of over what God has created. Now, Elohim is God. Spirit, every time you see spirit, like the Spirit of God in what we call the Old Testament, it's the word ruach. Try that out. Not as good as your Elohim, but pretty good. Ruach, this is God's spirit, all right? This is his presence. This word is feminine. Elohim is masculine. Ruach is feminine. Okay, some of you are already getting a nosebleed. Elohim is masculine, and it ends in I-M, which is the Hebrew equivalent of adding an S to a noun in English. It makes it plural. So God is referred to singularly, but the word is plural. So God, Elohim, is like a corporate oneness. it's like God has all these layers, and in these layers, there's masculinity and there's femininity. It's like God is beyond gender. Whoa. And what do you do with that? What do you do with that? When this was written in a really heavily patriarchal society, yet they could have lied, but the reality of what God was like didn't get squelched. It made it right through. We're two sentences into the Bible, and entire paradigms get rattled. What do you do with that? What do you do with religion where mostly men have used religion in the name of God to control people and to put women in their place and to put irreligious people in another room? And it's like from the first two verses of this ancient, ancient document, yeah, that might be what culture's like, but God, He's just not even part of that conversation. He's other, other, other. Wow, what do you do with that? So this isn't a man's world. Do you know how many people refuse to take part in our faith because this is a man's world, and that doesn't kind of resonate with what human beings are made to do. It doesn't seem like. It seems to be at odds. And sometimes it'll be at odds, and it should be because we're wrong, but wait a minute. Let's let God speak for Himself. So we're children of God, and God's not a single parent. You know? It's like God mothers and fathers us. Wow. Wow. This makes God a little bigger for me. And I know some people are in the room like, oh, are we supposed to be saying this? I'm telling you, this is how the Scriptures begin. It's nothing new. This is life-changing. This is inviting. This is, wow. God is so other. Amazing. Now, that's a whole discussion that you can take for a long, long time. You know, yet in Isaiah chapter 66, you've got God saying to Jerusalem, to His people, as a mother nurses her children, that's how I want to be for you. That God uses that imagery. But some of the names of God are strength and mighty warrior. But other, like El Shaddai, one of God's names used 48 times in the Old Testament. It means the many-breasted one. And I promise we're not teaching kids that next door. We'll let you teach your own children that. But the nourisher. Whoa. Kidding. This is life-changing to see God through a different lens this way. Fascinating. Let's take this further. Psalm 139. Psalms are right about in the middle of the Bible, and they're just, it's a collection of poems and songs written by different people. And Psalm 139 was written by David, and David is having kind of a wow day. He's got some lights went on for David this day. Psalm 139, starting at verse 1, O Lord, you see Lord in all caps there. That means that in the Hebrew from which this is translated, when you see it in all caps, that's God's name, the Yahweh. That's the I am what I am. I just am. All right? So, oh, Yahweh, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Now, that's a little scary. You think about the man upstairs knowing everything that you do. You know, that keeps a lot of people in check. That's we've seen people use that to control. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word's on my tongue, you know it completely, O Yahweh. You hem me in, behind and before. You've laid your hand upon me. That's protection language. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your ruach, from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, that just means sky. If I go up into outer space, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, a shale, down in the dirt, down in the grave, down in the pit, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Man upstairs. God isn't out there or up there to be proven or argued about. He's right here immediately to be experienced. He's right here. And that's life-changing. That's absolutely life-changing. Think about this. God is here now. Not because this is a church building, but because this exists. God is here. And no matter what you've done or what you haven't done, His hand is on you. and behind you and before you with strength, but with gentleness, trying to lead you into the best possible life. That's absolutely life-changing. But see, if God's up there, then the goal is, God, how can I get you to care about what's going on down here? How can I get you to notice what we need you to notice down here? Then the second part of the goal is, I can't wait to leave here and go up there. Scriptures never speak about that. The Scriptures don't talk about that mentality. God is here. And one of His goals is to get us to be fully here. So as a result, we don't believe here at Crosspoint, and a lot of Christians believe this, there are no God-forsaken places on the planet. Not one. Church-forsaken, sure. Not God-forsaken. We believe that God is the everywhere God. And that's why we've decided to follow Him where He already is in Kenya, to follow Him where He already is in Haiti, to follow Him into some forgotten lives here locally. And we'll continue to follow Him into more and more places as we're able to do that well. Because there are no God-forsaken places. He's already there waiting for us to meet Him there. We believe that. Look at Isaiah chapter 6. There's this king, this human king, and he dies. And kind of freaks everybody out because, oh no, what are we going to do? We don't have a human king, you know? It's like the president is dead. Now we're in chaos, and how's this going to work? How are God's people going to function? How is this going to work? You know, everybody knew who the king was. He sat on this throne, and we all respected him, and now he's dead. And so what do we do? And so Isaiah has this really wild image of what's going on here. In chapter 6, verse 1, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on the throne, high and exalted, and the train of His robe filled the temple. Above Him were seraphs, those are angels, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And you're like, I just saw that video on MTV this morning. And they were calling to one another, holy, 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 other, 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 completely separated from the common times three. Is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory. The whole earth is full of His glory. The whole earth is. Not just church buildings. Not just up on the mountain. Not just in a certain state of mind that we try to attain to. The whole earth is full of His glory. Do you get that? I'm still trying to wrap my brain around. The whole earth is full of the glory of God. Now, glory, it comes from a term that was originally used just to denote weight. The weight of something was kind of the glory. And so God's glory is like His significance, His impact, His reputation, what He's like, His splendor. That's what God's glory is. The whole world is full of the impact and the significance of Yahweh, Elohim, and His Ruach, His Spirit. Where can you go from His presence? Nowhere. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what you haven't done. God is everywhere. Every moment, every place, every space, every activity, every decision, every conversation, every war zone, every ball field, every kitchen table, every penthouse, every cardboard box, every wildlife preserve, every city dump, every kiss, every embrace, every dance, every birth, all of it is dripping with the presence of God. All of the earth, everything that happens, everything going on around us, everything we don't even know that it's going on as we sit here comfortably this morning, the whole world is sopping with the presence of God. It's life-changing. Do you know what this means? Do you know what this means? It means you don't have to be religious to pick up on it. You don't. I don't care what you believe. Everybody that's a human being recognizes love when they see it. Everybody recognizes truth and appreciates it. Everybody recognizes the cry for justice on this planet, the cry for fairness. Everybody recognizes beauty. Even if you can't define it, everybody recognizes beauty and meaning in a moment. Because the whole world is saturated with the presence of God's Spirit. And so I don't care what you believe. You recognize it when you see it. Even if you can't live it out, you know it when you see it. So we get to the Jesus. And we get to the New Testament writers. Because this God is worshipped and adored. And then Jesus shows up. And he's kind of like the great clarifier of what God is like. In the midst of so much confusion and so much clutter, Jesus shows up as like the great clarifier. Let me tell you what reality is like. John puts it this way in chapter 1, verse 14. He says, the Word, Jesus, the Word, the agency of God, the Word, He became flesh and made His dwelling among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. It's like humanity said, there it is. Yeah, I recognize it as soon as I see it. There he is. That's reality. That's the glory of God. Again, I don't care what you believe. You just recognize it. See, I have never, ever known anybody to study the person of Jesus Christ and go, ew. Never have. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I've never known that to happen. I know people who study Christianity and Jesusism and get completely turned off. I don't want anything to do with that or those people or that mindset. That happens every day. Many of us have done that. I've never known anybody to look intently just at the life of Jesus, the person, and go, ugh, I'm not into love and justice and healing and being given the best life possible on the merits of God alone. And I don't believe it's possible. We recognize it when we see it. And so to hear from Jesus himself in John 14, Thomas is having a discussion with him, and Thomas says to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? We don't know what you're up to. I mean, you're not fitting our predictions for what the Messiah was going to look like. You don't fit the mold of what we thought God would look like if he showed up in an earth suit. We don't know what you're doing. How are we supposed to know the way? And Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him, and you've seen him. You do know him, and you've seen him. This is what God's like. So it's like Jesus shows up to say, this is what human beings are supposed to be like. This is what a human being is supposed to look like. And you know what? This is what God is like. And not just God, Yahweh. This is what the God of the Bible looks like in flesh and bone. I've never known anybody to look at that life and be anything less than captivated if you're able to look past all the clutter. And so in a few minutes, we're going to sing and we're going to talk about praising God and praising the name of God. And that's just being wowed by him. That's allowing God to kind of shake us up and say, don't misrepresent me. Don't perpetuate misrepresentations. Be wowed by who I am. That's going to be really good for you. That's going to be really good for people. It's like Jesus came to help clarify that. Jesus came to bridge this gap that's created by our gross misrepresentation of reality and the way that we treat people, the way that we treat him, the way we treat ourselves. Yeah, we recognize beauty and truth and love and all that stuff, but we don't seem to be able to live it consistently. Jesus came to allow us to approach the unapproachable again and to bridge that gap for us. And so let me show you how to live this beyond religion. Jesus did not come to start a religion. Jesus did not come to start Christianity. When he says, I am the way and the truth and the life, he's not saying my way is superior to other ways. He's saying, if you want to know the great I am, Yahweh, Elohim, if you want to watch my life, follow me. Let's stand. This moment maybe just marks for you just the beginning of a journey. For some of you, it's just, oh yeah, I forgot I was on a journey. We've said this before. We will continue to say it. We are only concerned for you when you stop moving, when you stop asking questions. Some of you are very sure that you're Christians. Some of you are very sure that you are not. I'm concerned for both of you when you've already decided, I got it. I don't think about it anymore. I'm really comfortable with where I am. If you're a Christian and you've stopped seeking, if you've stopped looking at this best life possible, then we are deeply concerned because you're in a dangerous spot. Likewise, if you don't believe anything that you can really measure, but you're asking questions, we're great with that. Welcome to the journey. We're only concerned for you if you've decided what's true and you've stopped asking questions. You've stopped rethinking. So welcome to the journey. This moment maybe marks the beginning or the re-entry of a journey of finding out that Jesus is what God looks like. Let's pray. God, we look forward to discussing some of these issues for the rest of our lives. Discussing the fact that Jesus is the great I Am on display in human flesh. Thank you for sending your Son to bridge the gap that we've created with our gross misrepresentation of reality. Thank you for sending us not a religion or a rule book, but life and the way, truth. Thank you, God, that though we seem to be wired to recognize your glory whenever we bump into it, we can't seem to get that right in ourselves. And so you modeled it for us in Jesus. God, if there's anybody in this room right now that is anything less than inspired by who you are, captivated by your presence, anything less than encouraged to take the hand that you stretch out to all human beings, God, will you remind us that you're not anything that we've ever made up, that you're beyond that, and that you're here. We praise you, in Jesus' name.